Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Hour two of the show. Glad that you're hanging out. I'm Lawrence Holmes here with you until 2 o'clock. Gordon Widenmeyer continues to do great work covering baseball. You can now check him out at NBC Sports Chicago. He's been doing good stuff on the air. Of course, he's been doing good stuff writing, and he joins me now on the Al Pamonte Ford Hotline. Al Pamonte Ford in Melrose Park has 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from at alpamonteford.com. Gordon, thanks for joining me. I want to get an idea and sense of how things are going overall with MLB, and I know that there's been the latest offer from the players has been rejected. We'll get to that in a minute. It seems like owning the Cubs is not a lot of fun over the last few days, whether we're talking financially or socially. What's the latest that you're hearing?
Well, if we're talking about the Pete Ricketts, you people flap in Nebraska, where of course one of the co-owners of the Cubs is the governor of the state, there's pretty inflammatory video from a pastor who was in a meeting with him, talking about how he addressed a group of black pastors and leaders in the community as you people. I wasn't there, I don't know. I know that it comes barely a year after some racist emails from Joe Ricketts, their father's inbox was hacked and released. But there's an audio tape out now that may dispute that. I haven't heard it, but I've heard that may exist. So I don't know where we stand on the veracity of that on either side. If nothing else, I mean, it obviously speaks to just the incredible level of tension we're at in this country right now, really across the board, across the nation and across the board on so many levels. The not the least of which, and in fact, the greatest of which is what's gone on since George Floyd's killing and just, one more killing like that at the hands of the police. And you just wonder where it's going to end.
Yeah, and I thought that the statement that the Cubs put out yesterday didn't really have any teeth to it because it didn't mention that. And I feel like there are a lot of places, a lot of organizations that are making similar mistakes in that regard. With them as an organization, you have to ask some tougher questions considering the history of the people who are in ownership of the Cubs. But that's another part that I wanted to talk to you about. I mean, you wrote the piece on NBC Sports Chicago where you were talking about baseball itself and how they're in a precarious situation. It seems like Tom Ricketts, whenever I hear him talk specifically about the Cubs, is telling you that it's not a lot of fun to own the Cubs financially, which seems hard to believe.
Yeah, it was really fun until a global pandemic came along and screwed all the best laid plans of some of the investments that they've made, some of the investments that have required taking on debt, and that was nothing but good business moves, right? Nobody predicted this, but at the same time, it's really hard to swallow this idea that these, and it's not just Ricketts. Although I will say this, because of the launch of the Marquee Network and some other factors, the Ricketts and the Cubs ownership is in sort of particular vulnerability in the moment when it comes to losses. But they, like many of the other owners, the billionaire class out there, are better equipped to withstand the storm than anybody else that's working for them, and that includes the players. And so it is tough to hear and tougher to swallow sometimes when you hear some of these pleas of just, I mean, you use the word biblical in terms of the severity of the situation for these guys. You want to talk about biblical, talk about 40% unemployment rate, talk about working class people that suddenly lost their jobs months ago over this pandemic. And some of it because of similar business practices that maybe wouldn't have been in place 40, 50, 60 years ago that have left some of these companies less equipped to take short-term losses. So, you know, basically, I don't want to hear it, is what it boils down to.
How much of their, from what Ricketts has said publicly about their financial situation, do you believe, and what should the Cub fan believe?
I think there's probably grains of truth in just about everything he says, but I think there's conspicuous absences when it comes to what he leaves out. 70% of our revenues every year, or 70% of our revenues are tied up in attendance. Okay. Is that gate receipts? Because typically that's, you know, historically we've been led to believe that's what that means. Well, no, it's that. And it's also merchandising and concessions in the ballpark. Okay, fair enough. But it's also sponsorship in the ballpark and things like that. Well, which sponsorship? Because the ads behind home plate are about games being on TV, not so much the fans in the stands. So the ad on the marquee has nothing to do with people in the seats because they can't see it. So, you know, where are you drawing these lines? And also, that 70% number feels like it is influenced by what we know to be the case of the short-term burden of launching your own network. We were told last September by Theo that wasn't going to bear significant enough revenue increases to affect the payroll and baseball spending for at least a couple of years. And we know why. I mean, there's capital investment involved in starting up your own network. There's costs associated with it short term and in the beginning. And then at literally the moment that they launched, a global pandemic began, and they've had no regular season games. And so they've had nothing but cost for that network right now. So certainly it's a perfect storm scenario for the Cubs right now. But that doesn't mean that they weren't making more money than almost every other team in baseball all the way up until then. And that doesn't mean that 2-3 years from now, when we're at full capacity again, and it might be sooner than that, that they're not going to be able to recoup a lot of these losses. So there are others in and around the game that aren't as well off.
Talking with Gordon Wittenmeyer of NBC Sports Chicago, you should read his stuff. That his stuff is there now, so go over it. Make sure you check it out and obviously follow Gordon on all of his platforms. When we're talking about ownership, I know that we often simplify it down to billionaires versus millionaires. One of my questions is, with the Cubs in particular, valuation versus liquidity. Are they actually as rich as we think they might be?
Well, yes and no. And you hit the nail on the head. I mean, the liquidity issue is the big one there. They have made a ton of money, and it spiked at the time they got good and won the championship. So that's a given. That's indisputable. Now, they also bought the team through a heavily leveraged process that was a 10-year process of debt management, scheduled debt management. And that would have expired at the end of 2018, I believe. But they've also invested. They've invested in the ballpark, in upgrades. They've invested in the surrounding neighborhoods through their through their umbrella companies. Bought, I think, 11 of the rooftops. They've constructed a hotel across the street. So these are all things that are costs in the short term, investments. They've done some of that through some well-managed loans and debt. The other side of it is, okay, so maybe a lot of their revenues are going back into these investments, and that's fair. But the other thing that it does is it immediately increases your equity. As soon as any of these projects is done, especially in the ballpark, the equity in the team rises. The equity in the team rises. We know that's wealth, right? You have equity in your home rises. You have more wealth in your home. It's not complete apples to apples, but roughly that's how it works. And their value in that team is well over $3 billion. Now, that's accepting the pandemic, right? So that's pre-impact of the pandemic. And we can probably rest assured that if, assuming that there is an end to this pandemic that allows for normal functioning again, people start coming back to the ballparks, revenues start coming in at a similar level again, that value will still be there at that point. They bought the team for $846 million. So you're talking about nearly four times the cost of, or four times the value of what they bought. So I don't know if that fully answers your question, but yes, they're rich. They're far better off than they were when they bought the team.
Well,
they're better
I kept
off than they were five years ago.
I kept thinking about that because I felt like the players had a nice little gambit, and I don't know if they did this on purpose, but when you had the minor league players losing their salaries and having their salaries cut or sometimes just being cut themselves, I thought the players stepping up and going, oh, well, it's not that much money. I'm David Price. I've got this big contract. Here's $250,000 to take care of all the people in the Dodgers organization. And I kept thinking to myself, if the winning a PR battle was important to you, couldn't Tom Ricketts just cut a check, not from the Cubs, but from Tom Ricketts himself, to take care of minor leaguers or any other employees as an investment on goodwill and good public relations? I felt like that was something that was available to him that he is not taking advantage of.
I completely agree with you. And my take on, and I don't know, I mean, the interactions personally that I've had with Tom Ricketts, and you probably feel the same way. He's a nice guy. So there's nothing personal there, but a lot of times, I mean, how many billionaires stepped up in 2017 to say, we don't need a $1 trillion tax cut, right? Because that might be adversely affect working class Americans, right? It doesn't happen because they're all bad people, but I do think that there's an insulated form of thinking that comes when you say you're that good at business or when you reach that level of success in business. And I don't know if there's fear of loss involved in that or what it is. But there does seem to be a disconnect at a certain level, doesn't there? I mean, it seems to me in just that kind of thinking. And so I can't read anybody's mind. I don't know, but I agree with you. It seems like that would be easy enough to do if you want to win the PR battle.
Do you think that he's still enjoying owning the Cubs?
Well, I'm sure he hasn't in the last few days or the last few months. He certainly didn't last spring training when he was answering all those questions about not only his father's emails, but Addison Russell and on and on. I think he enjoyed it a hell of a lot when he first got in and all the way up through 2016, 2017. So, yeah, right now, probably not. But I will say this, and you know, and this is, I don't know how much this speaks to anything we're talking about. But you know, when it comes to the value of owning these Cubs and what you're getting out of it, Pete Ricketts is a classic example. I don't know what public office he won. I know he lost some. I don't know that he won any before he was the owner of the Cubs. maybe somebody can point me out that I'm wrong on that. Maybe you want a city council job, a position somewhere. But he becomes one of the owners of the Cubs. His profile rises. Next step, he's the governor of a state. And clearly, one of the benefits of owning the Cubs is to trade on that brand. And this family's done that like, nobody's exceeded that level of making use of your brand to further your own ambitions in baseball. I don't think. I mean, in this generation of owners, and, maybe I'm wrong on that too, but certainly they've done a masterful job of that, whether it's their alignment with some of their politics using the ballpark to host fundraisers or literally one of the owners becoming the governor of Nebraska.
Talking with Gordon Whitmire of NBC Sports Chicago, the name of the piece, the headline on your piece is how MLB's wonderful opportunity might turn into a catastrophic result. What made you say, hey, I got to get this down early in the morning, get this out? What are the things that you're seeing around baseball that lead you to believe that they might be squandering this opportunity that's in front of them?
Same thing we're all seeing. I just wanted to talk to somebody who's not on either side of the negotiating table, who has a history of examining the economics of the game. And I don't know that there's anybody better in the country at that, more renowned anyway, than Andrew Zimblist, who I talked to yesterday. We were told last week was this most important week in baseball history since 94-95. And I think a lot of us kind of knew that this was going to kick into this week. So this week's the most important in 25 years. But the bottom line was I wanted to try to get some measure of what the long-term cost is going to be if they don't play a season when they had the opportunity to play a season, or at least try. And yeah, most of that's a PR thing, no question. But some of it goes beyond that. But picture 94-95, when so many people turned off from the game. As Zimblist pointed out, if you used 95, which was 144-game season, and you projected it out to a full-season equivalent, it was something like a 22% drop in attendance from the previous full season of 93. Fans tuned out. And then Cal Ripken Jr. broke the record for consecutive games, and then a couple of years later, here comes Sammy and McGuire in the summer of 98. And lo and behold, steroids saves the game, right? And then that devolves into its own scandal. But here we are. Labor peace prevails after that. Revenues go up. Fans start coming back. And we've had for the last decade plus, actually close to two decades, pretty close to since that summer, just about 20 years of consecutive industry growth of revenues, every year setting a new record. Do you see any of that on the horizon? If this season goes dark because they can't get a deal done, so they don't even try, and they try to come back next year, there's already the pandemic impact that's going to be there, both economically across the country, and also whether fans will be either allowed to congregate in the numbers that we've seen in the past, or whether they'll be willing to. So there's going to be an impact there of some kind. Do you see anything coming along the horizon that would suggest things can be that there's going to be something that sparks an interest that drives the game forward again? I don't see it. This has been a game that's been in crisis for at least the amount of time that those revenues have been increasing. They've been because they've been increasingly depending on a smaller core of fans. As I pointed out in the story, the average baseball fan is a white guy in his 50s. There ain't going to be many of us left too long from now. And there's not a whole lot of backfill to that in the generations coming up. So what's going to save the game? I mean, they could really deal the game a massive torpedo blast here if they don't get some kind of deal done. And I think, yes, the players could make that happen. But really, I think it's on the owners.
So from what you've heard from different people around baseball, what's the feeling of whether or not it returns? Because you're right. They were kind of like June 1 was kind of a day that people had circled where we might see a step forward. And aren't we, like, with every day that we tick off, I feel like the idea of a 4th of July return for America is a less and less a possibility.
Well, first of all, they were talking about probably convening maybe around June 10th to start this spring training 2.0. So we've still got a little bit of time on that time frame. It doesn't take that long for people to show up. A lot of players have already been getting some work in, especially the pitchers have been ramping up their arms. I mean, if we knew, for instance, what's today, Wednesday, if we knew by the end of Friday that it was likely that we were going to come back, that we were on the brink of a deal that might get done Monday or Tuesday, and that teams could start informing their players, we think a deal is going to get done. At least pitchers could take whatever the next step is in their preparation, wherever they are. Because most pitchers, the ones that I've heard anything about or talked to, have the ability to throw where they are now. So they could try to ramp it up just a little bit in a day or two as they prepare to show up, and you're going to have expanded rosters. You could still pull it off. You know, if you could still get everybody together by June 10th and still pull this off for roughly a July 4th start. So I don't think we're at a place where like June 1st mattered that much. If we get past this week and there's no signal that we're close, then we could start getting into trouble. But for the most part, and maybe it's kind of, maybe I hear in part what I want to hear, but I do think that there's a lot of people that think they will play. I mean, look, the fact that Ricketts says there's scenarios where if we play, we're going to lose more money than if we don't play. But that said, we still definitely want to play. That's important. And I think that matters. And I would suspect that's reflected in most owners' thinking, despite what some of them might be trying to leak publicly as a message or a negotiating position.
Because it would be a short-term loss for the saving of the game and a long-term gain.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And by the way, if you're the owners in this situation and you capitulate to the players' demands, or even if it just looks like that, you can come out and be the ones to claim the high ground, to sort of take a hero's lap, to wrap yourself in the patriotism of baseball and American pie. You can do all that. You can have all the messaging you want, and I don't know how believable it is. We'll see what the final terms are. But you're in position to do that, which puts you in a stronger position moving forward in this whole idea of protecting long-term gains.
Gordon, thanks for the time and the really wonderful breakdown, very thorough breakdown of all of these issues. Read Gordon's work at NBCSportsChicago.com. He's doing great stuff over there, and you should follow him on Twitter at GWCub, and he has a podcast called The Podcast to Be Named Later. It's really good. You should check it out. They've worked tirelessly on that podcast, and Gordon has a space now where he could just talk all he wants.
No, and Lord knows I do enough of that. And by the way, fairness, and it's no accident that Lawrence is playing that up. Lawrence was our mentor, our singular terrific mentor in the whole process, and helped us learn how to do the podcast. So thanks again to you for that.
Oh, well, thank you. I enjoy you guys. You guys are having a lot of fun, and it makes me laugh that you guys are like, what's a podcast? And now you have a podcast that's successful, and that's a really, really good thing. Gordon, I'll talk to you soon, man. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks, Lawrence.
That's Gordon Whitmire. Yeah, I like to help people out when it comes to doing learning how to do a podcast, and watching him and Steve, like, it's so great. It's so great where I was trying to explain to him, well, this is a podcast. You don't have to worry. Like, we can do something again if we want because it's not live. we can record it again. And they've really done some fun stuff. So they did an episode for House of L, and then they launched their own thing, which is the idea. That's the goal. That's the type of thing that I love to do. We need to take a break. When we come back, our guy Chris Emma did a deep dive on Mitchell Trubisky. I know. But I want to talk to him about it, and we're going to do it next here on The Score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.